We have a game five tomorrow with the series tied at 2 games apiece, the Raptors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Very excited to have Eric Smith join us from our sister station, the Fan 590 in Toronto. And Eric, when last you and I spoke, it was heading to the end of the Indiana series in the first round. And you asked a very interesting question. Were people out west paying attention? I would suggest to you about 3 or 4 weeks later, yes, beginning to pay a lot of attention, especially now that the Raptors have gotten themselves back into this series. My question for you, sir, is, how did they get back in this series?
You know, I think it all starts and ends with home court for one, but then beyond that and riding the wave of emotion in the crowd and how rabid and vocal they've been in sort of rallying on the Raptors, not just in the postseason, but over the course of the regular season as well. Toronto and Air Canada Center, you know, became one of, you know, the hot spots around the NBA in terms of true home court advantage. But beyond just the, as I say, the emotion between the lines, I think the Raptors just did a much better job defensively, and I think they did a much better job jumping on Cleveland in each of the last two games and really taking the Cavs out of their comfort zone in terms of what they were trying to do offensively, really getting into Cleveland, you know, with their defense led by Bismack Biyombo, no doubt about it. And it certainly helps when your all-star backcourt plays like your all-star backcourt and like they did for so much and so often over the course of the regular season. They, you know, it's been Lowry and DeRozan much maligned over the course of the postseason, but late in the series against Miami and now at least for the last two games in this series against the Cavs, the two of them, DeRozan and Lowry, have played fantastically, and it's made a massive difference.
So, Eric, you've given me about three launching points from that answer. So let me go all the way back to start on home court advantage. How does it manifest itself, not necessarily in this series, but overall for the Raptors? Is it an intimidating factor? Is it a juice factor for the home team? How do the Raptors take advantage? How does it play out, that home court advantage for them?
You know, I think it's probably a combination of both, and I know that sounds like a bit of a cop-out answer, but I think it's legit. I think it's the emotion. I think it's the, you know, playing off the crowd. I think it's just the familiarity of the building, of the sight lines, the familiarity of the floor, the field, the rims, everything. You know, I think it's one of those sort of unknowns to some extent when you talk to players, and I would say it. You know, it certainly happens in hockey and in football and baseball as well, but the difference with basketball, I guess, is because of the fact that the fans are right on top of you. There's what, about a 2 foot, you know, space between the floor and those folks that, as I call them, sitting in Gucci Row in the real expensive seats right on the floor. The folks are right on top of you. There's no boards, glass separating fans from players. You're hearing absolutely. I mean, heck, look at last night. I don't know if folks were watching the game and saw in the fourth quarter the fan that got ejected from the game that was sitting right in the one of those front row seats, because he was too loud, too vocal, probably using a few too many colorful words to the point where LeBron James complained and the official stepped in and they got the Raptor security involved and all of a sudden this guy's out. You see fans, you know, get kicked out in football, baseball, and hockey as well. But I think in basketball, with the fans just being right there, right on top of you, even the fans that are around the bench, the opposing bench, they're literally like almost elbow to elbow, knee to knee with the players on the bench. It's just, I think that makes a difference when you are in a hostile environment as an opposing team. And when you're riding that emotion as a home team, I think it makes a massive, massive difference.
You mentioned how the Raptors have played defensively against the Cavaliers, and I might be going a long way to make a point here, but I wonder if how much Dwayne Casey's experience in the past when he was with Dallas playing Cleveland, or not playing Cleveland, but Miami and playing LeBron, how much of that, you know, past experience has benefited him here in this series?
You're not wrong for thinking that, but Dwayne Casey has kind of squashed those thoughts because he's been asked that a couple of times in this series.
Okay.
And even in preparation for the Heat, you know, or excuse me, for the Cavs in finishing off the Heat, he was asked, you know, could you play into this and could you draw into that and whatever. And he said, you know, it was so long ago, and LeBron is such a different player now, and he's with such a different team. The type of player he is on this Cavaliers team versus the way he was with Miami and the supporting cast that he has now versus the supporting cast he had then. He said he's such a different player. I don't think that there's anything that we can do. I think it's more a case of, you know, now I might sound crazy for saying this. Game one was beyond brutal from a Toronto perspective. How much of that was, and I'm not trying to make excuses, I'm just asking the question, how much of it was, from a Toronto perspective, having just played the Miami Heat for 7 games And about, what, 36, not even 48 hours later, boom, you're into game one against a well-rested Cavaliers team that has had nothing but time to prepare for you. You come back in game two, and you go punch for punch in the opening quarter. You're down two. You're tied with 4 minutes left in the first half, and you give up a 16-2 run that really just kind of opened up the doors for the rest of the game because you lost the third quarter by three and the fourth quarter by two. If not for that run that the Cavaliers go on in game two, you're talking about a nip-and-tuck ball game for the other, you know, 44 out of the 48 minutes. Raptors actually carrying a lead in that second quarter before things got out of hand in that 16-2 run. So I would argue that as bad as it looked in the first two, it was really just bad in game one outside of a four-minute stretch that made such a difference in game two. So Toronto has made the adjustments defensively since that first game, and I think they just brought it to another level when they got it back at home. And I also think that the move that Casey made to maybe bring it back to Dwayne, seeing as you brought him up, is how interesting for a coach who, over the course of the regular season, was so locked in on keeping his starting unit intact as often as possible, obviously barring injury, but sticking with the familiarity of the core and sticking with the familiarity of the rotation and of the guys in the second unit and not veering too far off the path. We've seen Casey now go with six different starting lineups in 18 postseason games. And he goes back to Luis Scola after not having played him for five, six, or eight ball games, if not more, over the course of the Miami series and even into the first round against Indiana. Now, here was a guy who started, I believe, 80 of 82 games in the regular season. The only games he didn't start were just a couple of nights off for rest. He was your primary guy in a 56-win season, and you sat him. You sat him for massive chunks of this postseason. And now going into the conference finals, you put Patterson back on the bench, bring Scola back into the lineup, and suddenly now Scola, not scoring, not rebounding, but playing defense and helping shut down Kevin Love, taking away, nullifying one of the big three over the last two games. Those are the tweaks and adjustments that I find interesting. Norm Powell, for that matter, is a guy that Casey leaned on heavily in the early stages of the postseason. Now he's not even in the rotation being used at all because he's not the right matchup. He's not the right, you know, guy for this matchup against the Cavs. And I think it's just the way that Casey's pressing the buttons in using his team. And I think that's where his experience perhaps as a coach, not necessarily just his experience against LeBron, has definitely played a factor.
Eric Smith from the Fan 590 in Toronto, our guest in Cleveland getting set for Game 5 tomorrow. You brought up the name earlier. I want to go back and just ask you about Bismack Biyombo. It's so cliche to say it's his coming out party or however you want to describe it. He has been impactful the last couple of games. Why?
I think because you don't have to worry about him on the offensive end of the floor, and that's probably why he's able to do what he does defensively. Because, A, he's still got a lot of energy because he's not necessarily having to expend a lot of it on the offensive end. But I also think because he plays off his teammates so well in that they know and he knows – we don't have to feed Biz to keep him happy. We don't have to worry about him maybe taking a play or two off because he's frustrated by the fact that he's not getting the ball or he's not getting the touches. He knows, and this is where I'll say, you know, I sound cliche, he knows his role. And not only does he know his role, he accepts his role. He goes out there, he knows he's there to block shots, to rebound the basketball, to play defense, and he's not going to back down from anybody. And I think from that standpoint, he has something that many on the Raptor team don't. And that's that defensive edge and that's that intensity. I'm not here to say that the Raptors aren't a strong-minded team or a team that, you know, backs down from challenges, but I think they're a team at times that is, you know, a little bit I'm trying to find a better word than softer. I don't think they're a soft team, but I think they're a team that doesn't have that chip on their shoulder and that doesn't have that grit and that grime sometimes that they need. And I think Biz brings that. And that then filters down to the rest of the team where suddenly now you start walking around with your chest puffed out a little more because if he's doing it and he's kind of setting the tone, all right, we can play off that and we can start feeling that way too. And I think that's where he's been so successful because he's doing it on the floor with his play. And he's backing up his words as well. But then he's also using those words in the press conferences and in the media and on the floor and with the finger wagging, pumping up the crowd and flapping his arms and getting the crowd and his teammates into it. I just think they're feeding off that emotion and the way in which he's played. And as much as this is his coming out party to some extent in this postseason, how well he's played, We've seen this over the course of the regular season as well, because we saw it for a good 20-plus games when Valanciunas was hurt. Biombo, when he was in the starting lineup for the Raptors, I believe it was 22 games that Valanciunas missed this year, and the Raptors were 16-6 in those games. Biombo, has been solid, and it's going to be very interesting to see what Toronto does with him in the offseason as a free agent.
What about the setup in this series? Because, of course, we're talking from a Raptors perspective. My guess is people in Cleveland are looking at it from what the Cavaliers are not doing. What have you seen from the Cavs in the last two games, or You know where I'm going with this. How much of this is the Raptors pushing the issue, and how much of this is because, LeBron James is a galvanizing figure down there. There's lots of people that love him when things are going well, and then there's Skip Bayless, who's just looking for reasons to hate him. Where are the Cavs in all of this?
I think there's a couple of ways of looking at this. I'll rip the page out of Kyle Lowry's book to one extent to answer this, and say that Toronto's simply done what they were supposed to do. After games 1 and 2, Lowry said, listen, I appreciate, fans, media, otherwise people are going to have opinions, but you're supposed to win at home. You're the number one seed in the East. You got LeBron James. Of course you're supposed to win. People can look at the way in which we lost, but whatever. A win is a win. A loss is a loss. The Cavs held court. They got their two wins. Now it's on us to go on to our home court and to take care of our home court. We were a dominant team at Air Canada Center this year. Now it's time for us to do the same. And they did. So now the key is, how do you bring that emotion and that focus and that detail and attention to detail and that efficiency onto the road? Because we're now at a best 2 out of 3 for the Raptors, and you're not winning the series if you don't at least win one in Cleveland. So I think that's one major factor, is just simply protecting home floor, and the Cavs have got to feel good about that based on what they did in games 1 and 2. I think the key also is 1 and 2, Cleveland jumped first, built up a lead, had the double-digit lead at the half. Games 3 and 4, it was the Raptors doing that. I think it's the team that has that energy and that first punch seems to have been able to ride things out and withstand the various runs that the opposition might have and ultimately close out these games. And I think the other thing as well is, I'll go back to, not to beat on one guy, but Kevin Love. Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, for that matter. Irving was fantastic in games 1 and 2. He was awful in game 3. Now, he certainly was better in game 4. But Kevin Love has struggled mightily in the last two games, especially in game 3. But he wasn't that much better yesterday. And then he, ended up getting hurt and was kind of struggling a little bit, banged up, and couldn't even get on the floor in the fourth quarter last night. So if you don't have those guys as running mates alongside LeBron James, and here's another one too, Tristan Thompson, to go back to Bismack Biyombo, has had his lunch handed to him by Biyombo. Biyombo has completely outplayed Thompson to this point. So if you're not getting that lift from those guys and it turns into the LeBron show, I think that actually plays into Toronto's favor to some extent, because if it's going to be him just trying to win it on his own, then I think I'd much rather take my chances that you give up 50 to LeBron James as opposed to giving up 25 or 30, but he's also got 10, 12 assists, and he's all over the glass as well, and he's as much a facilitator as he is a scorer. I think that's what you got to be concerned about if you're the Raptors going into Game 5, is if LeBron becomes a facilitator because other guys are playing well and he's getting other guys involved, that's when Cleveland is at its most dangerous point, I think.
Eric, my last one for you. You cover the league, you work in it. I'm just watching from afar and I'm a fan. There's a lot of talk about, the Raptors getting a lot of the short end of the straw here, the officiating working against them. I'm not a big conspiracy guy, but I do give the floor to you. Has officiating, have the Raptors been getting the raw deal here?
I think there have been a number of questionable calls isolated in certain moments in the games. But I think when you look cumulatively, for instance, let me just quickly say, if you go back to, and I did the math, so this is why I'm not some Rain Man savant here with these numbers here. I actually went and did the math and had to research it, and it took me time to add this all up because I'm terrible at math anyway. Game 3, 1:54 remaining in the third quarter, LeBron James picks up a foul. Cavs do not get whistled for a foul for the entire fourth quarter of Game 3. Didn't matter. The Raptors had a big lead. They were winning that ball game. Yesterday, game 4, no fouls in the first quarter. First foul is whistled with 8:56 remaining in the second quarter. That's 28 minutes and 58 seconds where the Cavaliers did not have a foul called against them. That's damn near impossible, especially when you consider the Raptors were leading yesterday at the half and going into the second quarter at that 8:56 mark that I speak of. They were leading the Cavs in terms of points in the paint. You're telling me you're getting into the lane and you're finishing amongst bodies and there's guys crashing at you trying to block shots and trying to get bodies on you, and at no point there was any contact to the point where there's a free throw being attempted, let alone a foul being called at any point in nearly 30 minutes of game action? I think that's almost impossible. Now, that said, second half yesterday, Raptors got to the free throw line 19 times. That's almost as impossible. I mean, when you're talking about getting to the line, on average, you know, if you were to look at two halves, 38 to 40 times in a game, that's monstrous. And I think as bad as the whistle may have been early, I think Toronto certainly got a much more fair whistle and dare I say got the benefit of certain calls in the second half of the ballgame. So I'm a big proponent and a big believer of, this stuff does even out in the wash. And I think that if you're blaming officials, I don't think that's fair when you talk about a 48-minute game and possessions, you know, whether they be in the first quarter in the first minute or whether they be in the fourth quarter in the last minute. If you don't execute properly and efficiently, you're going to lose games no matter what the officials do, pro or con. I think, you know, you're not winning 56 games over the course of the regular season. You're not winning game 7 against the Pacers or against the Heat. You're not winning 2 games in the conference finals and shocking the world and shocking the Cavaliers if it's just because, well, you've gotten calls. No, it's because you play well. And you know what? That's almost an answer in itself, is that in spite of the alleged issues, which I don't necessarily buy into as much, you're here tied 2-2. That's the story right there. You've won games in spite of things then. So don't blame it on the refs. Don't look at the officials at this point. Put your head down, play the game, and who knows? You're 2 games away, so I should say 2 wins away from actually advancing to the NBA Finals.
Well said, my friend. Eric, I know you're busy. I really appreciate you carving some time out for us today. Thanks for this, and hopefully we're going to catch up to you in a couple of days, and who knows, maybe talk about moving on for the first time in franchise history.
It would be absolutely wild. I'll give you another crazy one. We'll see what happens tonight with Oklahoma City and Golden State, but if the Thunder, and this is all based on ifs,
sure.
But if Oklahoma City were to actually upset Golden State, if Toronto were to actually upset Cleveland, not sure if folks have gone back to look at the schedules and look at the standings or not, Toronto would have home court in the NBA Finals if it's Toronto-Oklahoma City. They actually, you know, finish with one more win than the Thunder over the course of the regular season. So Toronto would actually have home court in the NBA Finals if it were a Toronto-OKC final. It's just crazy the way that the worlds are colliding right now with the Thunder and the Raptors in their respective series.
Pretty awesome. Thanks, pal.
All right, thanks a lot.